land has changed. The biosphere turned, become unfamiliar and erratic. I would say vengeful, but nature's indifferent to us. We fight for our survival, not nature's. There's a fierceness in the wind I've never felt before. Something is being unleashed from the softening permafrost. Why do we despise the world that gave us life? Why so alienated? Why wouldn't the wilderness fight us, like any organism would fend off a virus? The world we grew up in is changed forever. There is no way home. Is there something beyond science that is happening out here? What if the very thing we were here to pull out of the ground were to rise willingly and confront us? What would that look like? This is the last winter. Total collapse. Hope dies.
Welcome to another exciting episode of Not in a Creepy Way, the podcast where the Brothers Anderson will dig deep into the movies. The Brothers Anderson are... This is Eric.
And by the way, you know, when you're telling these little stories, here's a good idea. Have a point. It makes it so much more interesting for the listener.
This is Brother Jay.
You ask me if I have a God complex. Let me tell you something. I am God.
This is true.
There is a storm coming like nothing you have ever seen. And not a one of you is prepared for it.
So sit back, close your eyes, and let us take you away. Unless you're driving, in which case keep your eyes open and watch the road, and you know, anyway.
Welcome, this is Eric.
This is Drew, and I am in the most favored sibling spot tonight.
Because Brother Jay is at a music concert and isn't here to join us.
Yes, it's the third time I've made that joke, and it's still funny.
Yeah, we've had some technical difficulties, so we have started recording this podcast. This will be the fourth time, about a movie that we really want to talk about.
I really do.
If we didn't want to talk about it, we would have given up. But no. So tonight, 2006's The Last Winter, directed by Larry Fessenden, and starring Ron Perlman, Connie Britton, and some other folks. Drew, this is a personal movie to you. Introduce it a fourth time for listeners. First time for listeners, fourth time for me.
Well, close your ears, Eric. You've heard all this before. I relate very strongly to this movie because in my previous job, I worked in a field where we had to go out and do jobs in remote camp situations, including a job on the North Slope of Alaska, in the winter, where we stayed at a camp that looked very similar to the one in this movie. The camp was comprised of a bunch of modular buildings that are able to be brought in on skids, and then all connected together to furnish one large camp structure of interlocking buildings. Watching this movie, it really evokes a lot of feelings of being back in those situations where you're not only in a remote area away from home living in a camp, but you're also with sometimes a bunch of strangers, at best some acquaintances that you work with, all of whom tend to have strong and varied personalities. Watching this movie completely independent of the plot, it brings up a lot of feelings for me. So given all that, I'm excited to talk about it with you because you don't bring all that baggage to this movie. So I'm really interested to find out what you thought of this experience without having all that background.
I really liked it. It's got some issues as far as where the story leads, but as far as having a a small group of actors in a relatively small space, just much like John Carpenter's The Thing, although the story isn't anywhere similar in any other way except being in the frozen, desolate area. But it's pretty great. It's got some interesting ideas, and I thought the acting was really good. And it's a well-done movie. And the plot is pretty simple, or at least the setup is pretty simple. It is a camp in the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge, which, by the way, in real life has recently been opening to drilling, so perhaps this will all be truth here in a little bit. So you've got basically Ron Perlman. And what is Ron Perlman's job? Is he like the project manager, or is he like the crew leader, or what would his job be called?
I would call him the site manager.
Okay, there we go.
So in my experience, so I used to do environmental cleanup jobs, and in that, under those circumstances, you would have like technical part of the crew, like the folks who would lead the actual cleanup activities, and take your soil or groundwater measurements and kind of direct the cleanup activities based on whatever outcome you're trying to get. And so those would be the technical folks. But then you'd also have like the construction side folks who would, you know, run any heavy equipment, manage all the logistics, and so, sort of very, very different sets of skills. And then you'd have the one guy who was in charge of everything, the site manager. And he tended to be from a, like, construction type background.
And that's Ron Perlman in this movie.
Yes. And he comes in with a huge swinging dick, swinging it all over the place. Something I have experienced. Not literally.
Also at this camp, we have Connie Britton, who is great as always. What do you suppose her job is?
I'm not sure.
Like assistant site manager?
It's unclear. Yeah, could be. Let's call her quality control.
There you go. And then we have James Hoffman, played by James LaGrosse, who is... Well, he and his partner, Jamie Harold, who plays Elliot Jenkins, they are the, environmental people.
Yeah, so they're the science-y guys.
And what's the mission?
So there's a shut-in exploratory well they want to bring onto production, which means they have to bring in a ton of equipment to build the infrastructure out to this well, and to bring in well equipment to get this well online.
So is it the kick test well? That's yes. So they're basically going to hook up to that pipe.
Yep. And to get approval to bring in all this equipment, you have to have what they call it in this movie, an environmental impact statement has to be written and signed off on, which in reality takes years. In this movie, it seems like it would take not nearly as long if everybody agreed to it.
And that's the basic tension, is you've got the big swinging dick Perlman and Hoffman, who is the head of the environmental guys. They're all employed by this oil company, an energy company. But Hoffman has a history of being a heavy-duty environmentalist. He's written papers about it. Global warming, climate change, all that sort of thing.
Right.
And he's also sleeping with Connie Britton, who had been previously sleeping with Ron Perlman. And Ron Perlman is not happy about that. Another source of tension.
More interesting camp dynamics.
And then you have Zach Guilford, who plays Maxwell Mackinder, who is like a newbie, a greenhorn in the camp. And he is also Ron Perlman's nephew or friend of the family or so. I guess nephew.
I thought friend of the family.
Yeah. But
Either way. Yeah, and he's like doing like survey work.
Yes, because there are several sites they're looking at. So they have a couple snow machines, a snow cat that all live in a Quonset hut. They all live in a bunch of these modular Connex things. And the plane, the very small plane, well, I guess reasonably small plane for Alaska, drops people off and picks people up. But they're in the middle of nowhere. That becomes important.
Did you mention motor?
Oh, yes. I'm sorry. Another part. We have the token native lady who is there. She's the medic, I guess, and secretary. And we have Motor, who is in Hazard County, he'd be Cooter.
He's the mechanic.
Yeah, he's the grease monkey. And you've got a couple other employees who are just fun. But, again, it's a very small cast, and they're a very small place. And it starts out as kind of a character study where you learn about Ron Perlman, and you learn to not like him. And you've got, the dynamic between Perlman and Hoffman. Because Perlman wants to get... His job is to get the equipment over the tundra no matter what the problem is. And right now the problem is it's February in Alaska and it's not cold enough. You can't bring heavy equipment. I guess the plan was to build an ice road and then take the heavy equipment over the ice road, which is these are real things, right?
Yep, because that way you won't damage the tundra.
Yes. Well, unfortunately, and by the way, tundra, once it's damaged, stays damaged forever, right? It's a delicate thing, roughly, no?
It is tough to repair tundra.
Yeah, there we go. I don't know. I've seen pictures of vehicle tracks in tundra that have been there a very long time.
Yeah, conditions don't change much.
Yeah. Well, unfortunately, though, conditions are changing. It's too warm. It's causing an environmental problem. So Hoffman is not going to be signing off on having this equipment coming up through, even if Ron Perlman has a plan of, instead of just driving, he wants to bring them in on, what does he call them?
Rolagons.
And what are Rolagons?
Just like big tracked equipment.
So, but that's not going to fly either. And everybody knows that, although Ron Perlman wants Hoffman to sign off on it. But things are weird up north. And we have this kick test well that was drilled, 10 years before or something. And basically, the well itself sits under a wooden box out in the middle of nowhere, which is a very Lovecraftian thing. Like, I love this idea. In fact, there's a lot of books recently about how oil wells bring up the old ones or whatever. And, of course, I love the idea of, what is it, Lake Vostok under Antarctica, which had until recently been sealed for a million years or something.
Until recently.
Yeah. So I love that idea of, unleashing hell upon Earth by doing some sort of science. Although I don't have any problems with scientists. I'm like one of my brothers. So,
Hey, we cut that out of the podcast. That is non-canonical.
So did we actually? Didn't we include it somewhere along the line?
I think we cut out my major rant, but then we talked about it later.
Oh, of course, which is the great part of podcasts that irritates people. No continuity. Mm-hmm. So something's going on, and it gets kind of wild and weird, and we can talk about that if you'd like. But in the beginning, at least, it's mostly a character thing. And is it the characters that interest you the most in this movie?
Yeah, it's the characters, it's the setting. They get so much right. I mean, I have worked with Ron Perlman. When you have like a construction crew and then like a technical crew, there's this weird sort of inherent inferiority complex from both directions. I mean, it's really rare to get someone who has like a strong scientific background, but also knows a lot about like construction equipment and heavy logistics and that stuff. So having all of those skill sets in one person is really rare. So you'll have like the technical guys who know all the sciencey stuff, but then get really intimidated when they have to deal with heavy equipment or construction type situations. It makes them very uncomfortable. But then you have the construction guys, the site manager guys, who tend to be sort of intimidated by the technical side that they don't have much experience with. So if you have strong personalities and there's that inherent conflict, then you end up in a situation where if you're not able to admit, like, hey, I don't know about that kind of stuff, like if you have trouble admitting that you don't know something, then you're going to come in like Ron Perlman and just try and bulldoze everybody and bully everybody into submission so that you don't have to admit that you don't, either you don't understand or you don't have control over that part of the job. And so they got that dynamic so perfect in this movie.
That's a very thoughtful. See, when you started describing, I'm thinking, oh, so I'm going to sum it up saying, okay, this is just a classic jocks versus nerds. But it's more nuanced than that. You worked in this thing. You've had to manage this sort of situations. And having
indeed
having this knowledge is actually pretty important. If you could see that as a dynamic, you now have a way to change the dynamic.
Yeah, I mean, I've been really lucky to have a lot of opportunities throughout my career to experience both sides. So I've been in the field as like the technical person, but I've also had the responsibility of being in the field as a site manager. So I've had to get familiar with both.
So you would not recommend the Ron Perlman approach?
No. I think I've talked about on the podcast before that there's only been one time in my life where I actually thought I was going to get into a fight.
And it was with Ron Perlman?
It was with my site manager, yeah.
Wow. Well, so, okay, football games. Would you just go out and play a random football game just as something to do because you got nothing else to do?
Maybe, but that's part of his, like, alpha male bravado, right?
Yeah.
You come in, you give everybody nicknames, and then you're going to go play football. And you're going to establish dominance.
And does anybody enjoy that?
No. Okay. No one enjoys that. All right. Another, I know we're not really talking about this movie yet, but another part I love is the tense dinner. Because when you're in a small crew like that, you have dinner together every night. No matter what, because there's one dinner, and usually there's a cook that prepares it. So you're eating that dinner. So even if you're having conflict with somebody, you're sitting down at the dinner table with them. And if it's Ron Perlman, you're sitting down at the dinner table with them, and then you have to listen to him pontificate like an ass.
Okay, so what other aspects? I mean, I know that the young guy, Maxwell, who they called House because of coffee. And yeah, it was, again, having him give people nicknames is just a total dick move.
They're not even good nicknames.
No.
they're House.
Yes.
Motor. Although for all we know, Motor might have actually been his given name.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. I don't know. I mean, I guess we would normally just spoil a movie. Are we going to spoil this one?
We might as well. I mean, yeah. I don't know why you're listening to this podcast if you haven't seen the movie. And
because you,
I don't know,
you enjoy our stories and voices, don't you?
Yeah. Well, given that, I still don't know if you're going to want to watch this movie after you listen to the podcast. So,
well, it's funny. I think I had told you that I had watched, or I don't know if I had, I must have watched it. Because I rated it a 2-star out of 5-star on Netflix. And then I watched it again because, you know, you said you put it on your list because you really liked it. I'm like, well, maybe I missed something. And I watched it. I thought, oh, it's pretty good. And I watched it again this week now. And I like it quite a bit. I think it has kind of a goofy ending. I was hoping for something a little more Lovecraftian. but maybe that's, you know, like passe.
That might have been a budget issue too.
That could have. Well, I don't know. There's weird. They did some weird stuff. There's some weird CGI in this movie. There's. I mean, I guess you couldn't have all practical effects. Although you could have. Again, this is one thing that would probably have benefited from less seeing what's going on and more just evidence. Because there's a situation where Hoffman goes out into this little, I don't know, like a tent kind of thing. Is there an official name for that thing?
No.
Okay.
That's a science hut.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So he's got a bunch of his notes and he's collecting temperatures in the ground. But he ends up, as he's in there, and we get some exposition in a really clever way, by the way. I like the way they used graphics in this movie to kind of tell the story.
Yeah, almost like a documentary fashion.
Yeah, or a cartoon. It worked. Yeah, it was just great. I like that a lot. I like the fact that you got to see in the very beginning of this movie the North Corporation, like, company video or whatever.
Yeah, like the orientation video.
Yeah. By the way, also, while we're jumping around, is sour gas a real thing?
Sour gas is a real thing. That means gas that has a high hydrogen sulfide content.
Gas like vapor gas or gas like liquid gas?
Vapor, like natural gas.
Okay.
Vapor.
And it lives...
Not gasoline.
Okay, and it lives far underground?
Yes.
And if it comes up in the regular world, it's a problem?
Yes, it is.
Okay.
I mean, hydrogen sulfide gas is deadly. So you have to watch your concentrations. But hydrogen sulfide content in gas, when it's combusted, it turns into sulfur dioxide, which is a regulated air pollutant.
Ah. So maybe if you had some sort of, like, I don't know, perhaps a catalytic converter type thing to attach onto your well to mitigate some of that.
Or, there's all sorts of things you can do. Chemical scrubbers.
Yeah. I was trying to point to a real life thing where things weren't attached correctly and you found out later, but apparently not the same sort of thing.
Gotcha.
So, okay, moving on. So we learned that sour gas is bad. Doesn't come up till the end. We know that climate change seems to be bad for several reasons, and there's something going on. And then we have one of my favorite things in any movie, and that is the crazy person's notebook. Someday I will have my own crazy person's notebook.
See, other thing I love about this movie, so when you're dealing with a bunch of different personalities, if people are, especially in a remote situation, if people are assholes, but they're predictable, it's fine. You can deal with. But if somebody is just a weirdo, that is terrifying.
Do you have stories to tell about weirdos in the field? Have you had people disappear from your camp?
No.
Okay. That's a good thing.
No. The camps I've been in, there's nowhere to go. I mean, we had to be, I was out in one, Aleutian Islands, so we had to build a camp from scratch. And we also had to include an electric fence to keep the bears out. So there's no disappearing from the camp.
Oh, and thank you for the ice. So, and in that situation, you would also have a bear guy, right?
Yes. You know who's super weird? Bear guards.
And they've got the guns.
That's not fair. But I've had a couple weirdo bear guards. So that's extra terrifying when the weirdo is the one who's allowed to walk around the site with a gun.
Yeah, like a high-powered rifle.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, well, that's the thing. In this movie, there were no guns, right? A flare gun, that was all they had? All that we saw.
I'd be shocked if Pollock, Ron Perlman, didn't have a gun. A real gun.
Yeah, that makes sense. So something's happening. And at first you think it's just this new guy who's sort of weird and freaking out. And then it starts to kind of affect everybody over the course of this movie. Everybody gets the tension ratchets up because people are doing weird things and people are seeing weird things. And there's some strange mystical thing going on. And
well, you had the young guy who starts. He's the first one to start freaking out. But it's Hoffman's notebook that's all Jack Torrance, right?
Exactly. Oh, yeah. It's complete Jack Torrance. And he's like one of the more stable people in the camp, you think.
Well, he's quiet.
Which is dangerous.
Yes.
Okay.
Which can be creepy.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I liked the characters. That was great. Yeah. He's got his crazy notebook, so he thinks something's going on. He's got a grand conspiracy theory. You've got people having visions of caribou herds and whatnot, getting disoriented. You have freaky rain in the middle of February in Alaska.
On the North Slope.
On the North Slope, yeah. And things just go steadily downhill. And then one of the character that you meet first in the whole movie, who has wandered off once already, it gets progressively crazy and ends up taking a little video camera with him and walking outside naked for a nice little hike. Quite a long hike, because he gets all the way to that kick test well.
Yeah, but he didn't walk there, right?
Yes. Yeah, he couldn't have, right? Hundreds of miles or something?
I mean, you see something grab him on the video,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. Yes, exactly. You know, that, again, it's, you know, nature is kind of the bad guy in this movie, as we find out. In a weird, what I thought it was a way cheesy way. Because, yep. As we learn, Hoffman's theory is that, you know, so climate change, you know, we're messing with the climate, whatever, but you really can't, humans can't fight nature. Nature fights humans. And what if nature fights back with the one thing that the humans are trying to get? Instead of the humans trying to get down and get that precious, precious oil, what are the oil or whatever they're drilling for? It comes up to attack them. It's chilling.
Is that what happened?
Nature fought back?
Something.
See, I don't, if it was purely a nature fighting back thing, so like, I guess a spin on The Blob or something, then that's one thing. But then you've got these caribou hallucinations, which I thought were effective, but weird. And then all of a sudden you have these weird multi-animal morph things, a little bit more Lovecraftian, who turn out to be bad guys.
Yeah, there's like the ghost caribou herd creeps people out. There's the creepy ravens.
Yeah, creepy ravens are awesome.
And then there's
the Wendigo.
The King Kong Mega Mega
exactly,
caribou.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah, I guess it is like a sort of a, and by the way, what's his name? Larry Fessenden has a movie called Wendigo.
Oh, perfect.
Yeah, so, yeah. And, yeah, there's two Native American characters in this movie, and they do their Native American character shtick, which is...
They're supposed to be Native Alaskans, right?
Yeah. Yeah, who knows? Yeah, I never expect anybody Native Alaskan to be anything but maybe Mexican or some sort of lower 48 Native tribe, much like Northern Exposure. But again, I'm not going to be too critical. You know, what can you do?
Or Asian, if it's a Steven Seagal movie.
That's true, yeah. Steven Seagal, there's a weirdo.
Indeed. I would not want to be in a remote camp with Steven Seagal.
No, it seems like you would not be the guy you'd want to be around.
Yeah, so part of this movie is part, you mentioned it before, part like The Thing. And there's like the stranded out in nowhere, and you start to be unable to trust those around you for whatever circumstance. Because people start to get creepy. And so there's that tension. People start acting crazy. And then you have a plane crash.
Yeah, the plane crash is pretty awful.
Yeah, which is, it's like one of the biggest fears when you're out in the middle of nowhere is to have a catastrophic accident.
Yeah, that is
you are screwed.
That's true. The plane that is coming to, I guess what the big guy is coming to, is it the real project manager maybe who's coming to see you there, or somebody from the corporation is coming?
Yeah, they're with a replacement for Hoffman.
Yeah, because they fired Hoffman now, or they've promoted him, transferred him out because he's not agreeing with Perlman. And the plane in, by the way, was this like, is this in the drone times? I mean, were this is like drone footage, or was it actual like?
This is 12 years ago.
Okay, so it had to be like what, like helicopters or?
Either helicopters or small planes. Yeah.
Because there was a lot of things here that could have been like a drone thing today. In a good way. I mean, I think it was fine. Mm-hmm. And the plane crash, yeah, is harrowing. I mean, the plane crashes into the maintenance shop Quonset hut thing and causes a fire.
Well, and it cuts into the camp proper.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So everybody aboard the plane, immediately or quickly, is burned to death. And you've got injuries. Maxwell, they find his dead body, and they carry him on a little sled on the snow machine back to camp. And his eyes have been pecked out by the ravens, and he's all like got his rictus of death thing going on, so it's very creepy. I think it's on the cover art.
Yeah. Raven, there is a lot of cultural significance to lots of different Native Alaskan tribes when it comes to ravens.
Yeah.
So I don't know if that was a coincidence or if that was some coding in the movie.
So we've got his body ends up being in a strange place after the plane crash. And yeah, and they're fucked because the plane that came to them is crashed, so they can't get out using the plane. It set the snow machines on fire, most of them. Motor has already destroyed the cat. So they're kind of stuck except for one snow machine. And, yeah, there's a big hole in their camp, so they have to figure out how to barricade themselves in a different place. And the mental illness or whatever is spreading.
Yeah, you have Hoffman's assistant dude who kept having a bloody nose and then he just went to bed and bled out.
Yeah.
So he's dead.
Yep. And then
you've got Lee starting to repeat the same thing that Maxwell did with can you see, or what, did you see them? Can you see them?
Yes.
Super creepy.
Mm-hmm. You have Dawn, who's the medic / secretary. Who ends up
/ spiritual advisor.
Yeah, exactly, yes. Who ends up killing, what was it, Lee? Or?
Motor,
okay, yeah. Yeah, because Motor's injured or whatever, but yeah.
Yeah, Lee wandered off without his boots.
Exactly, he was just a pair of boots. And that's kind of bad enough, because you've got, was it Abby? Is that her name?
Yes.
Abby, who's left back in camp with, and so the camp is having problems. And then Perlman and Hoffman are going to take off in the snow machine together. And they, of course, they have a fight about which way to go. But
of course,
Perlman's big swinging dick. So he's going to take him to the ice road trucks. And they go that direction and they find the ice road trucks and they're creepily empty. And Hoffman, who's wanted to go to this native village, finally gets his way, except that they've destroyed their snow machine, so then they have to walk. That doesn't go well. We've got water, again, like the gray. Water and cold is not a good combination. And then...
there were a few things in this movie that sort of entered into my own personal lexicon, because they were so great. like when Maxwell started freaking out, and I've already forgotten the spiritual advisor's name.
Dawn.
Dawn, yeah. She says, Maxwell's got the big eye.
Yeah.
That became something. I was like, oh man, look out for that guy. It looks like he's starting to get the big eye. Another thing that that really stuck with me was, give me your boot. That is such the perfect embodiment of the site manager who's just lost his shit and has no idea what he's doing, but he's gonna go do something. Even if he doesn't have the right tools to do it, he's gonna go do something. Let's give me your boot.
So the end of the movie, what do you think is going on? What is this movie about? I mean, is it like just a radical like climate change is the villain in a horror movie?
I think so. Yeah, I mean, that's sort of the evil capitalists are willing to destroy whatever they need to get their precious commodity. So they get their comeuppance in the form of nature, but like literally supernatural beings fighting back.
Well, the quote, and I'll put the quote in here, about how it's all about ghosts. Like, what is oil but fossils? Ghosts of former living things.
Mm-hmm.
What if this is the last winter before the collapse and hope dies?
Yeah, and maybe the whole world's come to an end? It's kind of hard to tell with that last scene with Abby.
Yeah, where are they in Fairbanks? Yeah, so Abby wakes up.
I think she's supposed to be in Fairbanks.
Yeah.
So, yeah, maybe that's just what Fairbanks looks like.
In February, raining, empty.
Yes.
I've never been to Fairbanks as an adult.
Sorry, shots fired at Fairbanks for no reason.
Well, we had a conversation the other day about, because we had the earthquake and the tsunami warning, and because the tsunami warning goes out on the Amber Alert type network, people with the correct phone carriers got a horrible, after the earthquake, got a horrible sound on their phone and being told, get to high ground, it's a tsunami coming. But in Anchorage, we have a very shallow inlet, so the architecture of the inlet means that we are never in tsunami danger in Anchorage. And, but, you know, there's no way to exclude Anchorage from that big old global message. So people freaked out and called 911 to say where to go. But we were talking about, you know, how the port of Anchorage, although they carved out some of, you know, they've made improvements to the depth of it. It's pretty shallow, so you can't get, or you at least until recently, you couldn't get big cruise ships in Anchorage because it's not a great anchorage. And our grandfather had always said they should have named Seward Anchorage because they actually have a deep port there and you can park whatever kind of boat you want there. And they could have named Anchorage Seward because it's just after some guy. And granted, an impressive guy and important in Alaskan history. But, yeah. It's a bullshit name for a bullshit town.
Yeah. By the way, my wife got the tsunami alert and I did not.
Yeah. Yeah. It's funny. I'm on GCI, so I didn't get it. I got a text message from Nixle.
Yeah, but we're on the same carrier. We're on the same plan. I don't understand it.
Yeah, it's crazy.
That was great. That was great. That was a fun evening. I had just fallen asleep, like probably within 10 minutes of the earthquake. So I was not woken up by the earthquake. I was woken up by my wife.
Yes, as was I. Yeah. Not your wife, but my wife.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's good. Yeah. So got up, went and grabbed the kids and made sure they're all right. And I'm like super cranky because I'm such a horrible sleeper. I just gone to sleep. I'm not mad that my wife awakened me up, but I'm just cranky. And then we get back into bed and things are calming down, and I actually think maybe I should text my mother. But no, I'm not going to do that. It's like almost 1 o'clock in the morning. Turns out I probably should have.
I did.
Yeah, I should have. That's why I don't get the preferred son slot in the introductions. I bet even Jason texted our mother. So I was like just starting to doze off again. And then my wife's phone had this like horrible ringer on.
Yes.
And I was like, what are you doing? And she's like, she's looking and she's like, oh, there's a tsunami warning. And it's so effective that both of us were just like, eh.
Yeah, well. I mean, that's the thing is like, it's funny. So I immediately get up because, first of all, the earthquake lasted a long time. And
it did.
And, you know, it was just one of those steady shaker things. But at every second, I was thinking, okay, it's going to stop. Or you're going to get that big jolt at the end, you know, sort of the whip crack kind of thing. So shaking. I'm not hearing any broken glass in my house, but that's coming next, you know. And then also, like, and then it just, after the longest time, it just stopped. And it's like, oh, okay, cool. So got up and checked on Journey, who slept through the whole thing. My dog and bird, who bark and squeak at each other 24/7, 365, were both snoring during the earthquake, could not have been bothered. So, you know, we didn't lose power and we didn't lose the internet. So I'm on the internet. And of course, everybody's, it's one of those things where if I was, 20 years younger, 25 years younger, I would have just told everybody, hey, I'll meet you down at Denny's. We're all up.
Yep.
But yeah, so we're all sort of commiserating online and trying to be first to get to the Tsunami Warning Center official magnitude reading or whatever. But, you know, it's, and then people are saying, you know, we survived the quake, you know, there's a tsunami warning. And I was putting messaging, don't worry about Anchorage, we're not getting a tsunami, don't worry about it. And the response was, well, my message is not just for people in Anchorage. I'm like, well, okay, fair enough. Yeah, whatever, good luck. I'm not gonna have a fight with somebody on Facebook during a tsunami warning. It's a little rude. So anyway, turned out to be a big old no-brainer. In fact, it was scarier the next morning when they had whiteout conditions on their way to work, or that later that morning. So it was, it's Alaska. We call it Tuesday, right?
We sure did.
Yeah.
All day.
Yes. And then now, Thursday, it's fucking cold outside.
Yes, it is.
This has been a week of a little bit of Alaskan-ness, which we've kind of missed this year so far. It's legitimately scary driving on the road in some places in town right now.
Yeah, I was that morning where it was really, really bad visibility. I was driving in on the highway. I was coming up over one of the overpasses for you locals. I was driving over Dowling, heading towards Tudor. And it was I was in the left-hand lane, and it was snow was kicking up. It was coming right. I was driving right into the snow, so it was hard to see in the first place. And I was looking ahead of me, and it just, something looked off. It looked really strange in the lane next to me. It looked like the fence that's like they put along the frontage road for noise barriers. It looked like it was way closer than I expected it to be. So that made me nervous. But I was in the lane I thought I was in. And then as I got closer, I started to sort of unravel this optical illusion that I've been seeing. It wasn't a fence. It was just the outline of the trailer, of a tractor trailer, that was just coming into view. So it looked like this fence was just cutting out of the snow. And then as I got up to it, it was a whole giant truck. And it was freaky. Not being able to see it, even though it was like 20 feet from me.
Yeah, well, and the thing is, it was snowing, you know, big, fluffy snow. But, you know, for the last couple of weeks, it had been warm in the daytime, cold at night. So it was icy underneath the snow. And that's always scary. It's a, you know, You can't see, and if you hit your brakes, you got no... Because if you can't see the ruts in the road, you don't know where you'll be going next.
Yeah.
And it's easy during that kind of thing that, you know, yeah, you're following what you think is the lane, and then all of a sudden the tracks go into a ditch, and you're suddenly in a ditch. So nobody wants that.
Yeah, I mean, you're really trusting those taillights in front of you to know where they're going.
Exactly, yeah. So, no, that's the part of the year I hate driving in Alaska in. I'm actually much better about it than I used to be. I was sort of a white-knuckle driver, I guess, in my 30s. 20s, I was fairly fearless, but, you know, whatever. Not fearless, but fairly, you know, plenty of just trying to get it to work, traveling lots of miles, like, to and from.
Your risk tolerance.
Yeah, there you go. And then in my 30s, I was not risk tolerant. I don't know if it was an anxiety thing or whatever, but it was like, during winter, I did not want to go driving any place if I could help it, because I don't want to be in a ditch. And I've had a couple times where, again, it's not a big deal. You're driving along, and you're in the lane that has been naturally made, which doesn't correspond to any lines painted on any road. And all you have to do, especially if you're in a littler car, is, like, hit the edge of one of those grooves, and mm-hmm. you're suddenly in a you're in a different trajectory. So you can recover, and then you're just scared, or you can freak out and end up in a ditch, and nobody wants that. So, knock on wood, been good about that. Although last year we had a Jesus take the wheel moment with my wife, where she was driving the car that I drive now, the Escape. And it was super slippery, and she just kind of on Dowling Road hit like a patch of something or other, and it spun us all the way around and hopped up over the median, just a small, like, hard median. And I thought we would hit a sign or something, because we ended up pointed in the correct direction in the opposite lane, and with a whole bunch of snow all over the windshield, so he couldn't see anything for just a little bit. I was like, well done. Yeah, it's awesome. We didn't hit anything. And then she's like, oh, yeah, I closed my eyes. Oh, that's not what I wanted to hear. So,
yeah. You got to do what you got to do sometimes.
Yeah, well, no, it worked out fine. We continued back the way we started. We did a U-turn and we went back home. And a cab driver stopped to ask us if we were okay. Not to just like it waved at us. Hey, are you okay? We're like, yeah, no problem. You know, so. Anyway, yeah, on the Glen Highway today, we had a whole bunch of cars in the ditch and a semi on its side between the birch woods, and that's a rough thing. But, oh well, you deal. Anyway, sorry. So, Brother Drew, the last winter, anything else on the last winter?
I thought this movie was well made. All the actors I thought were really great, but I don't know if this is a good movie. And so I'm looking to you to tell me if this is a good movie or not.
I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it because the acting was good, because the characters were fleshed out. But I mean, you know, more than just a cookie cutter. In some cases, not much more. But you know, at least you had feelings, or I had feelings about the characters toward the end of the movie, and or initially in the case of Ron Perlman, and. I thought the ending was a little goofy, but the problem, you know, the thing is, this is like a nice little horror movie, a nice little small horror movie. And with horror movies, that's kind of what you get sometimes, is you got the little goofiness, because, you know, it's hard to capture these things on film. And sometimes, you know, it's a goofy idea, and you just manage to have the right cast to make it interesting. And I think it was this. I mean, I think I would turn this from a 2 to like a 3.5.
Nice.
Yeah. So you said that one of these guys is from some more recent thing. Like Connie Britton is been a bunch of stuff, including Nashville. Ron Perlman's been in everything, and he's always great. Although it's funny, because to me, Ron Perlman is like a cross between huge imposing actor and Will Ferrell. Maybe it's the hair, and I'm sure it's a hair piece, right? He can't have that hair.
But he's got that hair in every movie.
So does William Shatner.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe like a cross between Charlton Heston and Will Ferrell.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, so, I mean, he's very compelling to watch. Again, is he a good actor? Is Ron Perlman a good actor? Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, he's a great actor.
So is it James LaGross who was in something more recent?
He was in Zodiac.
Oh, okay. Who was he in Zodiac?
He was one of the cops.
Oh, okay.
He had a really small role. He was like a uniformed cop in the beginning, and then at the end he was like one of the detectives who just kind of showed up.
Hmm. Like Vallejo cop or something?
Yeah, sounds right. I don't remember exactly. But to me, he's always the guy from The Last Winter.
Okay, so who? There was somebody else then, I think, that you mentioned. I could be wrong. Mm. Who was the guy that played the guy with the bloody nose? He looked very familiar. Or is he just a very familiar type?
He did look really familiar to me, but I couldn't place him. Maybe he'd been like on an episode of The X-Files or something.
Yeah. He was somebody sidekicked in something, or he played a lab tech at an NCIS or something.
Yeah, the dude that played Motor, he's been in tons of stuff.
Kevin Corrigan.
Yeah.
Oh, he was a Smashing Pumpkin, wasn't he?
No, that was a different guy.
Oh, okay. Yeah, lots of stuff. Not a whole lot. Portlandia.
Fringe. He was on Fringe.
Oh. Okay, who was the guy? The weirdo-looking guy with the... He was in The Sum of All Fears. The Bloody Nose guy. Aaron Brockovich.
Oh, there you go.
Elementary. The Good Wife.
Okay, so he's one of those that guys.
Yeah, I think so. He was in Hannibal. Yeah, so yeah, he's one of those guys.
And Maxwell ended up being in Friday Night Lights, right?
Oh, is that... was Connie Britton in Friday Night Lights too, or is...
She was.
Okay, yeah. I've never seen Friday Night Lights, but I've heard it's good.
I haven't seen it either. The TV show. Yeah. I haven't seen the TV show.
Okay. So, I'm assuming it's worth it? Was it worth it to... I mean, I know you wanted to... I mean, that's the thing. Is this? Yeah, it's a very specific thing.
Yeah, I mean, it's worth it to me. But, I mean, it is a goofy movie. Like, the message of the movie kind of makes me roll my eyes, but... It's interesting, and it's well done.
Is it better or worse than The Gray?
It's not as good as The Gray.
Okay.
I like The Gray a lot.
I wanted to see tentacles come out from under that box under the Kickwell.
Well, maybe when they remake it.
Yes. In my version, the world dies because of some sort of tentacly thing. Not Japanese. Lovecraft.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, this movie, it brings back like so many stories to my head. Like specifically the camp I was in up north. They actually put the camp out on the sea ice because the job we were doing was on a bluff. We were cleaning up a landfill on a bluff. So the camp was on the sea ice and it was just totally flat. And in clear visibility, you could see another camp, like sort of off in the horizon. And one of my coworkers, I would catch them just like staring at the other camp. And the other camp had a weird permit for what they had to do with their wastewater. They were allowed to discharge their water, but only a certain volume in a certain area. So instead of actually coming up with a treatment system for their wastewater, they would just move their camp every 3 days.
It was like the nomad.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause I mean, it's on the ice. It's all modular and on skids. So you can just drag it to a new location and you can discharge more of your wastewater in that location and then move to a new one in 3 days. So she would just be like staring at this camp and I was like, you know, getting the big eye. And I finally asked her why she kept staring at the camp. And her answer was really, it was thoughtful, but it's kind of creepy. She was like, the camp moves every 3 days. And we're on a water conservation program in our camp. So I know that when the camp is in a different location, that's when I take a shower. I was like, all right. Okay. Not glad I asked.
Yes. Okay. I was thinking maybe she said, I wonder if they're watching me. Weird.
Yeah. But like specifically the dinner scene where everybody was tense at the table. I was on a job one time where we were doing, we were cleaning up a site that actually had, it used to be a former asphalt plant. So if you dug down in the soil, you would actually find these little tar balls. Just this free product was left over. And it was contaminating the soil and the groundwater. So, our job was to go in and clean it up, but we got in there and it turns out it was way bigger than we initially thought it was. So there's no way we were going to be able to clean it up all in one season. So we dug down, we dug a bunch of the soil out. But there's still residual contamination and we had to stop. I mean, we were out of funding. We were out of time. So we had to stop, and the site manager was trying to keep the schedule. So he brought in a bunch of soil to backfill this giant excavation that we made. But at the same time, we needed to collect samples to characterize what we were leaving. So then we could later, like, do a risk assessment and figure out what the next stage of cleanup was, what we needed to do. But he was having none of that. He's like, we need to backfill this excavation. We got to go. So I was sitting out on the site with all my sampling equipment trying to take samples while they were bringing in dump trucks of dirt. Like, it felt like they were trying to bury me. So I remember I got super pissed. And so I like had to hurry up and collect my samples really quickly. And then I went and had a talk with the site manager, who I liked quite a bit, but he was just in that, he was an old crusty construction guy and he just got in that mood. And so we had a chat about it, and neither one of us were very satisfied with the outcome of that conversation. And then it was dinner time. So we got to sit down at a table right across from each other and share a meal. Mm. It was great.
And say, yeah, pass the butter, Jeremy.
Yeah. So like that dynamic is so perfectly captured in this movie. And I think everybody can relate on some level to that. Maybe not as specifically as I can or the people I worked with can. But well, they did such a good job with those interpersonal dynamics that I found this movie really enjoyable to watch.
That actually reminds me of somebody else's story, if I can indulge myself by stealing some story. Listener, the setting is Anchorage, Alaska. The time of the year is Martin Luther King Day. A couple years ago, it was probably a little bit like this year. There was more snow. And it was like wet snow. Maybe I should not use real names. Okay, so guy works for the city, street maintenance. So, you know, that's his job. He drives a road grader or a plow kind of thing. And there is, in Anchorage, Alaska, there is a monument to Martin Luther King. It's along our park strip area. But if you're not familiar with it, it's not like a gigantic statue, or it doesn't have like the eternal flame coming out of it. It's actually rather modest. It's sort of low to the ground. It's, I think, marble and stuff. So if you don't know it's there, you might, for instance, as a plow operator, dump 4 feet of slush right atop the entire monument the morning of Martin Luther King Day. So when people came down to celebrate Martin Luther King Day, they found their monument completely buried in like 4 feet of snow. So they call up the plow driver and they're like, Jesus, you know, what were you thinking? He's like, what are you talking about? You covered the monument. They want to investigate this as a hate crime. He's like, what? Like, what are you talking about? The Martin Luther King Monument. What? Where is that? It's there. Oh, yeah. I buried that shit. I have no idea. My job was to get the snow off the road. I didn't know there was an important monument there. But, yeah. No, it was. Anyway. Just one of those funny little things. So, housekeeping? Do we want to save mouse talk for Brother Jay? Or do you want to...
Yeah, we can. He seemed really excited
about
it.
He is, yeah. He's got a whole... in fact, I have... here's a question for you. Do you think anybody's interested in just a housekeeping episode? Or should I... Because I've kind of taken the housekeeping from the last two episodes and kind of shoved them together in a file. And I can either try to edit that down and shove it on the end of some housekeeping, or I can just put it out if it's interesting stories, or what would you think?
Well, absent any knowledge of what those stories actually are.
I could probably cobble together a couple of mouse stories. I think there's a mouse and a mouse update story.
I haven't even better update. yes, that's all I talk to our father about nowadays. He talks to me about his floor, and I talk to him about my war on garage mice.
That's funny.
Yeah, I never answered your question about if we should do a housekeeping only episode.
Oh,
but you know what? I will throw that out to our listeners.
Ah, yes.
If anybody wants a housekeeping only episode, maybe even like a, I don't want to sign you up for something, maybe like a midweek bonus episode or something.
Oh, there we go.
Yeah.
Let us
know.
Here, go on Twitter under not_creepy. And if you want housekeeping, hashtag house me up. And if you don't want housekeeping, hashtag pigsty. Or not. I don't know.
Why don't you do a Twitter poll?
Yeah, a Twitter poll. I don't know how to do a Twitter. I think under Twitter, we have 14 followers, and I think like maybe 10 of them are bots. And
14, that's pretty good.
Yeah, well. Send your feedback to show@notinthecreepyway.com or call us on our new voicemail account to leave voice messages. Or you can text us at this account to leave text messages. The number is 425-243-9169. That's 425-243-9169. What are you waiting for? Put it in your phone right now, and then when you listen to an episode, you can just hit your contacts. Dial it already.